Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the official Tennis.com podcast, featuring professional coach and community leader, Kamau Murray.
Welcome to the Tennis.com podcast. I'm your host, Kamau Murray. And before we get to today's guest, let's talk about what happened at Wimbledon. What a historic run by Chris Eubanks, a player that 18 months ago wasn't even sure how much longer he'd stay on tour. Started commentating, started doing other things. And I honestly think commentating, talking about the game, having to sit in that small room with the big TV and stare at the game really helped his development, helped his maturity, helped him sort of see the game through a different lens and learn the players. And I think that paid off for him here at Wimbledon. So we want to wish a big congrats to Big Banks, Chris Eubanks. On the women's side, we saw early departures from some of the players that we had high hopes for. And we saw Margarita Vondrousova. You know, she had tough 2 years in and out of competition, battling injuries, and she held the throne. And we want to congratulate her on her title. Ange Jabeur, very emotional at the end of the women's final. 0-3 now in Grand Slam finals. But listen, when you look at people like Caroline Wozniacki, Simona Halep, all of them, I think, lost their first three Grand Slam titles before they won their one. So consistency pays off in this sport. And you got to keep trying. Our first guest today is Ethan Quinn. Ethan Quinn is the reigning NCAA champion from University of Georgia. Recently decided to turn pro. Going to get the wild card to the U.S. Open. Had a chance to sit down and talk to this very mature 19-year-old. Talk about his upbringing, and how he views himself as a personal brand, and how he got to this point. Take a listen.
Welcome to the Tennis.com podcast. I'm your host, Kamau Murray, and we are here with the reigning NCAA singles champ, Georgia Bulldog, Fresno native, Ethan Quinn. Ethan, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm happy to be here.
So I'm always curious about how people get into tennis because, you know, you got good height on you. And in America, if you're over 6 feet, you're playing basketball first. So how'd you get into tennis?
Honestly, my family, I grew up about 5 minutes from a tennis club. I would always go and watch my mom play tennis through her years. She played until college. So whenever she was playing at the club, I would just want to tag along and stay with her. So I would sit on the bench and watch her play some 4 or 5 women's doubles. But I was just eager to be out there. And then eventually they got me started. My dad, he's 6'6". So he wanted me to, be in baseball or basketball or any of those traditional sports. Which I never actually even played a baseball game. I played basketball to 8th grade, but once I got to probably about 7th grade, I was really into tennis. I was wanting to play every single day, be out there 4 hours a day. Even in Fresno, it's 110 degrees in the summer, and I was just wanting to be out there. I was one of the only guys on the court some of the days, but I was just wanting to play as much tennis as possible, and I think that's where my love started for it.
So having a parent that plays tennis is dangerous because they always start out trying to teach you first, right? And then at some point, they start, like, starving you. Like, I know I was like, my kids now are 6 and 8. So when they don't do well at camp, I'm like, yeah, no ice cream tonight. You know what I mean? So did your mom ever try to coach you, and for how long?
You know, she never tried to coach me. She would always be the person traveling with me. I never really had a coach traveling with me, probably not even until college. I didn't have a coach travel with me really until college. And then, but she would stay right in the back fence, and she would always be on the fence. And from when I think I was 12 years old, I told her, I'm like, Mom, get off the fence. You can say out, listen to anything you say, but if you sit on the court, I'm gonna ignore you, and I'm gonna be angry at you. And that's kind of where our relationship started. We had a really good routine off the court. And then kind of once we were able to have those discussions, we had a lot of drives going to Stockton for some L2 nationals. So once I was able to kind of tell her that and have that full conversation, I think that's probably where my tennis excelled and where our relationship continued to grow, where I wasn't just constantly being mean to her. So I think that's where it helped us.
Now, you know, the worst thing about having a parent drive you to a tournament is if you have a bad loss and you got to drive home with them. Tell me about a time where, number one, mid-match, your mom just leaves the court and goes and waits in the car. And two, a time where you're at a tournament and you're like, Jesus, I'm not looking forward to this car ride.
You know, there wasn't a car ride that really sticks out to me. There was plenty of times where we would hear stories from like the club I was at where one of the other guys, his dad would make him get out of the car and run for 5 miles and he would stay and drive with him. And there was a couple times my mom said, you know, I was thinking about doing that to you. And it never got to that point. But I remember actually Kalamazoo, my first year of 18s, I lost a match and it's vivid in my memory. It was thunderstorms outside and I was inside the house just like in our Airbnb. And we were like just yelling at each other. And then she was just like, you're quitting tennis. You're done. Like we're done. This is horrible. Everything's done. We're done with tennis. And I think from that was one of the moments where I was like, oh man, she's scary. And she is mad right now. Right. There was not another word said the rest of the night. You could hear the thunder and lightning. And it was a scary situation. I played consolation and then actually final doubles. So ended up being a good tournament, but it was a really scary moment.
Don't you love that? Where you be at a junior slam, where you be at Kalamazoo with like the best 128 kids in the world. And you know what? We should just quit because it was a bad day. We should just throw the whole baby out with the bathwater because exactly. Today was a bad day, even though I'm one of the best 100 kids in the world.
Exactly.
Like, let's start over. So obviously you talk about Kalamazoo. You talk about playing junior slams. What made you decide to go to college, right? Because now, you know, kids are like that summer between senior year and freshman in college. You're like, should I try? Could I go? Can I get a deal? Can I travel? What made you choose to go to college?
You know, I always wanted to go to college. There was never really the thought process of me playing and going pro early. I always wanted to be at a university playing with the team. I've always been a team player. I felt like I played spring team championships, intersectionals, all those team events, zonals, everything like that. I played and I really enjoyed it. I felt like I excelled a lot at that level. And then I was always had my mindset playing college, getting a degree. My mom really wanted me to get a degree as well. So I kind of always had the plan of going to college and even staying for 4 years and never really thought of leaving early or anything like that.
So you chose UGA. Who was the second option? I'm always interested in seeing where people go and what the backup plan was or what the second school was.
You know, it's a hard question. Definitely between Florida and Texas. Florida, I felt like I'm not going to say it first, but I felt like Ben was going to be too good. I had this feeling. I remember telling my coach, Brad Stein, that I was like, I don't think Ben's going to be there for a full year. Like he's the guy that like it's going to help me transition and get a lot better. Like a lot of the seniors when I went on my visit were going to be leaving the next year, like Sam Riffis, Andrade, Duarte, they're all going to be leaving. So it was going to be a whole new team. And I felt like, I was like, man, Ben's going to be able to leave the next year as well. So they were probably my second option. I really was looking at them, especially Brian Shelton. I have so much respect for him. He's such a great coach, great person. Mm-hmm. Wanted to go there. But in the end, UGA just had that feeling of home. Manny really reminded me of Brad almost. They just have that kind of swag when it comes to being a college coach and just being a coach in general. And then the actual school itself, it had everything I was looking for, a great sports program, great academics, and then just the city overall. It was really, really reminded me of Fresno, honestly, just the neighborhood of where I lived and the neighborhoods kind of right around Athens, Georgia, like Five Points, just really made me feel like home.
So I actually interviewed Manny about a month ago on the podcast, and one of the stories, he was like, yeah, you know, Ethan came second semester and redshirted. And I was like, you redshirted the eventual national champion. What were you thinking, right? So tell me about how you go to UGA, clearly could have played, right? But you decided to spend a semester in redshirt. Tell me about that decision.
You know, it's funny looking back. Me and Brad were talking a little bit, and we're just like, gosh, I think the only regret we have with the college, what we've done, was redshirting that first year. But the actual decision was I lost Orange Bowl. I was up 5-1 in the third set in the first round and lost the match. And I told Jamie, I'm like, Jamie, is there a spot for me? Can I come early? Like, I don't have what I need at home. And I think if I come to school, I'm going to be able to do really well. But honestly, going into school, I had the lack of confidence that I would even play in the lineup. I was looking at the lineup and I was like, where am I even going to play? Like, I don't think I'm that great of an asset to the team. Like, I'm a great supporter, but I don't think I'm going to be able to come in and do well for the team. And so that kind of halted me even wanting to come in. I was playing futures and losing first round of, I think I lost three first rounds in a row. So I was really like, that kind of gave me that perspective. I was like, all right, I'm not able to even play at the future level. Like, let me just get another year of practicing. And then I think after 2 or 3 months, I went back home to California and played my first, like, a future in Bakersfield, California. And I ended up making the semis after qualifying in. I beat four guys within inside the top, I want to say 400. And then ended up playing Rinki Hijikata, who's now 110 or something like that. And I served for the match. And I think that moment kind of gave me that realization that I could actually play. And then the following month, I went to Vero Beach and I finaled a 15K there. And I went to Manny right before SECs. I was like, Manny, like, can I play? Like, I kind of want to play. Like, I'm looking, like, it's our team. Like, I feel like I'm ready to be able to play and provide, like, a chance for us to win an NCAA. And they were kind of, like, hesitant a little bit as well. Just like, I don't know. Like, we could get you when you're a senior rather than just turned 18 like 10 days ago. Like, I don't know. Like, there was just a little bit of hesitancy. Mm-hmm. And so we ended up deciding that, you know what? No, like, I won't be able to qualify for the tournament. I think it'll be best if we just wait until the fall to start your freshman year. And I think there's the whole decision. Mm.
So you mentioned Manny, you mentioned Brad Stein. You know, I coached, you know, several pro players. And, like, the relationship is always very interesting. You know, I've been told several times, be quiet. You're talking too much. Go stand in the corner, right? Or I've been told, you know, say something. And I say, just put the ball in the box, right? And they'd be like, is that all you got? Right? You know what I mean? So tell me, in college, you have on-court coaching, right? And for, like, a young player like you, it's a major benefit because you actually get to learn, like, in the moment, in the middle of the match, where on the women's tour you could do it, but now, you know, now the men's tour is progressing, but the men never were able to have conversations with the coaches mid-match. Tell me the best and worst advice you were given mid-match and on-court coaching.
You know, I think the worst, this is kind of, me and Jamie actually have a team, not team, but like kind of a joke about it. Manny is classic for saying, work it out. And it's just like, you kind of sit there and you're wondering, what does that even mean? And you're just like hitting balls, you miss a shot, work it out. And it's like, what am I trying to work out? Like, so I think that might be the worst that I've received. Me and Jamie kind of joke about it. Me and him, whenever we're on a team trip, I would sit in the shotgun and we would just kind of talk about it. And then I think the best I received was, I mean, am I allowed to cuss here? Okay. Yeah. When I played at the US Open last year against Delbonis, Brad was on the sideline and he had said to me, like, our entire game plan was like, all right, you got to spread the court, use angles, make him move. And I get down a break and Brad, like, yells across the court. He's like, Ethan, hit your forehand. And from that point on, I break held and was able to win the first set. And I just think kind of playing my own game was like, all right, that's all you need to do. You have a big forehand, just use the forehand. Why are you trying to play to this guy's weaknesses? Just play to your own strengths. And I think that was something that helped me so much.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
So you win NCAAs, you decide to turn pro. What was that decision? Because, you know, we see NCAA champions, they say, I'm going to come back for another year. With NIL out there now and different opportunities, what was the decision? Like, you know, normally I always say in this sport, industry tells you when you can make it, right? So Ben Shelton came here. You know, Chicago's like the good luck charm for tennis players. I don't know if you know that.
It's good enough.
Emma Raducanu got to the finals of our one, we gave her a wild card, got to the finals 125, and she wins U.S. Open. Literally, right? All the way from qualies. Ben Shelton gets to the final here. Goes to Cincy, beats Katsuru, turns pro, 9-3 in the world. So this is like good luck charm. So you're in Holy Grail right here. So what was the decision to go pro? Because it's not just automatic. Oh, I want to see the Blaze, I'm going pro. That's not how it works in tennis.
Yeah, you know, after winning NCAAs, I didn't really have much time to think right away. I mean, I was hurried to the plane leaving Orlando. I finished my match, and in 2 hours, I was like, all right, I got to get my flight. So I was kind of able to silence everything that was going on in the world and just kind of enjoy that moment. But once I got back to Athens, I was there for about a week or so. Me and Brad were able to hop on a phone call, and he kind of told me just where the market was at on my brand. I'd like to say EQ is a brand now.
EQ, I like that.
And he kind of told me on the market, where I could be, and then also just on a realistic perspective of just where my game could go within the next 6 to 12 months, and how if I was at college, there's possibly to be a little bit more limitation, a little bit more distractions, obviously. And he felt like for me to develop and do what I want to do and become a professional tennis player, that going pro would be that best option. It was a really hard phone call when I ended up having to call Manny and Jamie, because I never really had the intention. Once I got to school, I was like, all right, I'm going to finish my degree, and from there, I'm going to be able to do what I want. But I realized that, say I don't win NCAAs next year, it's like there's a lot of recognition right now, but if I don't do what I'm supposed to do next year, then it kind of all collapses. And I felt like, all right, this will be the best for me, my brand, where I want to be. Obviously, I wanted to win a team championship, and unfortunately, that's going to be, I'm going to have to let go of that hope and dream. But I'm getting to do what I want to do, and I think that's the best thing I can look forward to. And then I'm still taking classes at UGA, doing online alternatives just so I can get that degree and be able to do kind of finish out the college that I wanted to finish and what I had the intentions of doing.
Well, congratulations. I just had the opportunity to watch you play. Got that big forehand. Keep looking for it. Keep going and stay focused. Thank you for joining us on the show, man, and good luck in your career.
Thank you. I appreciate it so much.
Our next guest is a veteran on the ATP Tour. He's been in the top 50. Marichenko. He is somebody we always see in every draw on the Challenger Tour, battled through injuries, even started his own YouTube station during COVID. He's somebody that a lot of people on the Challenger Tour look up to. Great personality, very witty, funny, got great wins over the likes of Nick Kyrgios, Medvedev, and others. So he knows what it's like to play at the top. And he shares some great insight about what it's like, what came together in those weeks when he won his challenges, what it's like to play against some of those top players, and now being back on the Challenger Tour, having to look at those guys on the main tour at the Grand Slams. Take a listen.
Welcome to the Tennis.com podcast. I'm your host, Kamal Murray, and we are here with the veteran, former top 50 player, winner of 8 ATP Challenger Tour titles, career wins over people like Nick Kyrgios, David Ferrer, a veteran on the tour, Ilya Marchenko. Ilya, nice. Thanks for joining the show.
Yeah, thank you for inviting.
So you're a man of many talents, but your first talent, obviously, is being a professional tennis player. How did you get into the sport? Because when you think, you know, when I look at the tennis world, there's so many people who are, oh, my dad was this, or I grew up across the street from this, or my mom was Tracy Austin, like Brandon Holt, right? So many people who just have tennis lineage. Do you have the same story?
Well, no, not really. My parents have nothing to do with sports, but my brother used to be a figure skater. He used to compete at Olympic Games in Nagano. So, like, we have some sports background, but he stopped his career pretty early, so I don't really remember the grind, right, to be honest. And yeah, and my mother chose the path for him, like the sport for him, figure skating. And then it was a turn of my father, and he liked tennis, so he started to play with me. We started the same day, not the same day, but like same time. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just the game inspired me. I like to run, I like to do all these shots and fighting and everything. And yeah, just beautiful, beautiful game to play.
So you learned to play with your father then, and it became like a father-son kind of thing that kind of made it interesting early.
I mean, I was obviously training with other kids as well, but he spent a lot of time on court with me, and we were competing. We were like playing sets, trying to win. He was pissing me off, you know, kind of irritating, you know, using all these tricks and
making you mentally tough. Yeah, they call that making you mentally tough.
Yeah, making me mentally tough. And yeah, at some spot he stopped his progression and I continued.
You know, when you're old man, you know, you peak early, right? Yeah. You get really good early and then you like you get stuck.
He still says that the last match we played that he won it. Obviously, I don't remember it. I doubt it's true, but okay, whatever.
So how did you go pro? Because, you know, it is really hard to know what steps to take, what academies to go to if you don't have a parent that did it before.
Well, for me, it was extra hard. We didn't have that much money in our family. It's I'm from a small city in Ukraine, obviously, and Ukraine is not really a rich country. And we had no finances for me to travel and compete. I didn't play many junior tournaments. I played like 5 in 1 year, so almost all in Ukraine. One was like in Moldova, next country. And yeah, I was just blindly believing that one day I can become a pro. And I got help from coaches, from like one guy was paying for my trainings. And when I was 18, I got an offer to go to Donetsk, to Vicart Tennis Club. And since then, basically, I became a professional tennis player because I started to like playing like 20 plus tournaments a year. And yeah, that was a big change for me and a big chance.
Now, I think like one of the things that's different between the US and overseas is that there's a lot of small challengers, 15Ks, 25Ks, in like small countries where you can train, right? And you can bust. But in the US, you gotta fly everywhere. There's not that many tournaments. So did that help being European, playing the Challenger Tour?
I mean, Ukraine, not really that close to. I had to fly everywhere. And even when I was in Donetsk, for me, it was the normal thing. I would have to take 2 flights to get anywhere. It was either through Moscow or through Kiev. Mm. So never direct flights. And yeah, it was, comparing to what I have now, I live in Bratislava, I fly from Vienna everywhere or drive, it's so much easier. But back then, it was traveling was not the best, and we didn't have that many tournaments around. I mean, yeah, we had like a couple of futures, so that's where I got my first points. Mm-hmm. That's why I got this offer to go to Donetsk in the first place. But it was like 3 in a year. And then we had 3 challengers as well. Mm. I mean, it's much better than it is now, obviously. Not now, because now it is war in our country, but like we didn't have a challenger for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. And obviously it doesn't help for local players, because I remember we had a lot of good guys, but they had to stop at some point because they had no money to travel. Mm. They had no like finances to continue their careers. Some went to US, and some just started to coach. That's about it.
So everyone that plays Nick Kyrgios remembers the match, because every match is exciting and he always does something. He just can't help himself. Is there anything memorable about the time when you beat Nick Kyrgios?
I think during our match he made the best shot of his career.
Really?
That's my opinion, obviously.
What was it?
But he made a drop shot. I reached it, made a drop shot back, and then he ran full speed. I'm almost at the net. He runs full speed, dives, and make a drop shot while diving. And I'm staying at the net, and I cannot reach it. I mean, it was on Instagram a couple of times, but I mean, for me, I haven't seen anything like this. Yeah. I mean, diving. And it was break point or something. He saved it. But since that point, our game turned around, because he was leading. He was set up. And I eventually broke that game. So I don't know if the dive actually helped me. And eventually, yeah, he pulled out. He withdrew. I don't know if something happened I don't think it happened during that dive, but I mean, he had some hip issues. It's really hard to tell. But he was, yeah, I was diving drop shot on hard court with full sprint.
Not smart.
It was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. I mean, great shot.
But you got the win. So one of your other talents is you started a YouTube channel. Well, and it's actually really interesting because I think that, you know, there's multiple tours and there's like people obviously identify the big tournaments, right? You got the Premier Five, you got the Slams, but there's so many stops in small countries and your YouTube channel kind of like highlights that. Why'd you get the idea to do it?
It was COVID.
Yeah.
So I mean,
you were bored.
It's an obvious answer. Yeah, I was bored. Yeah. I made one video, I don't remember, something with games, and people liked it. And I started to learn how to edit videos because I had no idea. So I started like learning and trying to do these videos. And eventually, yeah, I don't know, I had like, but at the end, I was almost 5,000 subscribers. Not even one bot subscriber, so I'm pretty proud of it. And I had to stop like starting of this year. But I'm not saying that it's over, so I might come back when I'm when I finish my career, when I have a bit more time, because now it's a bit tough.
So you turned pro in 2005, 18 years on tour, a veteran, and now you see the tour changing, right? Lots of young guys coming through. What would be your advice to the young guys, right? Because this generation, to me, if they don't make it in the first year or two, then they're like done, right? They go get a job. I don't know if they have the stamina to not have instant success and keep going. But you're out here, right? Top 50 in the world. What would be your advice to guys starting out?
Keep the grind. I mean, the field is very, very even right now. I think it's more even than it used to be. Mm-hmm. Everybody can hit a ball, and only tough guys are staying. So they need to be tough. That's the main thing for the young guys. They have shots. They have everything. They have physics and everything. They just need to be tough. That's about it.
So now you're starting to dive into coaching.
Yeah, a little bit.
You know, and tell me about your experience that, right? Because, it's hard being a player, you know, at your level and coaching, like, I mean, come on, it's so easy. Just do it. You know, just make 10 in a row. Come on, just easy, right? But then now you're coaching players and they say, hey, just sit back there and pick up the balls. Just be quiet. Tell me about your coaching experience so far.
Well, it's obviously it's very different story. I mean, physically wise, it's much, much easier, yeah. I have to tell you. And, yeah, but it's different. Obviously, I know something about the game, and I can share a thing or two. And it's good that I'm actually working with a guy who's 18, who is like an adult player almost, because I think it would be much more difficult to work with kids, because I have no idea. I don't have a patience. I don't have, it's a different story. But yeah, I think I have something to share. And yeah, we'll see. For now, unfortunately, he's injured, and for now we don't have that much success, which is not great for me as a coach. But yeah, I really hope we get better. And
do you feel the pressure? Because you know, as a coach, when your player is not winning, you're like, oh man, he might fire me next week, right? It's like,
I mean, I'm still playing, so it's not that much of a pressure right now. So I mean, you know, if he fires me, man, maybe I play one more year. You know, it's no pressure for me. I feel pretty confident about myself, and that I will not be suffering without a job eventually.
And now you almost have a hidden partner, because now you got an 18-year-old hidden partner. You got some young legs to practice against, so it kind of helps you.
Yeah. But when we were practicing for different surfaces, It was a problem, because I had to play with him when I didn't really want to. So I had to practice, obviously, my own training session, and then to go and hit with him, which was, that was tough. That was tough 1 week and a half.
Well, man, I appreciate you taking time to be with us. Consummate professional. I really, guys who are 18-year careers on tour, love the game, continue to grow the sport. Believe it or not, your YouTube channel is actually really important to the sport because we need more media in tennis, not less,
yeah,
right?
I know. It's true.
So, keep doing what you're doing, man. Thank you for taking the time to come on the show.
Thank you.